Welcome to the Atom Ventures podcast. My name is Bhairav Patel. I'm the managing director of Atom Ventures and Atom CTO. Today I'm here with Eric Partaker, CEO, coach, and mentor. Say hello, Eric.
Hello, hello. Excited to be here. Thanks for having me on the show. And let's do it.
So I'm actually really excited about this interview because I've read your book, The Three Alarms, a couple of times now, actually. And I have implemented some of the key messages and points that you've put in your book into my own life, which I thought it's always great to interview the person who's actually written the book that you've implemented some pieces of. So before we get into The Three Alarms, do you want to give a little bit of background about yourself? Because obviously there was a major incident that caused you to rethink your life and actually come up with this book at the end of the day.
Yeah. So the best place to start with the story is in the middle. And by doing that, we go back about 10 years or so. So I had just boarded a plane, a return flight to London. And shortly after the plane reaches its cruising altitude, the pressure that's started to develop in my chest has become pain. It goes through my left shoulder, down my left arm. And my left arm just goes ice cold. And I said to my friend and colleague sat next to me, I said, Lewis, he sees that I'm not well. I said, Lewis, please feel my arm. Something's not right here. Lewis feels my arm. And he says, gosh, it feels like it's been hanging in a meat locker. Like it was really freaking me out. Things are getting a lot more painful. I start getting quite nauseous. I'm sweating. Lewis runs to get the attention of a stewardess who asks if there's a doctor on board. Doctor rushes up. I was lucky. There's a doctor out there. Literally was a doctor on board. Rushes up from the back of the plane, takes my vital signs and says, we need to land the plane immediately. I think he's having a heart attack. And when you hear words like that, 35,000 feet in the air, it's pretty damn scary. I was terrified. I had this, it was a mixture really. It was a mixture of being terrified and feeling so guilty, like, cause I realized I had done this to myself. I was the only, it was me to blame. And, you know, I thought about lots of things flashed through my head, but the overarching thought was that I was worried that I was going to go completely just before reaching safety. And so the descent felt like an eternity. You know, just please fly faster. Let's get there. Finally, we touched down and there was an ambulance waiting on the runway that the airport had closed for the emergency landing. And emergency response team boards the plane, puts me into the waiting ambulance. They administer nitrates right there on the runway, which immediately, it's pretty instantaneous, increases blood flow to the heart. And then as the ambulance sped off to the local hospital, I looked up into the eyes of the paramedic looking down at me and I said, please don't let me die. I have a 5-year-old son who's now 16. Cause, you know, in a moment like that, you know, you're not going to say, please don't let me die. I need to clear out my inbox, right? So it's, it's like whatever matters, you know, to you, comes out, you know, the truth reveals itself. And that was the change moment. I didn't change instantly at all, but it started the change because I woke up the next day in the hospital thinking, gosh, that was close. I'm thankful to be alive. And this doesn't work. And so what had happened was that for the first half of my career, and I'm 45 now, but the first half of my career, it was just everything being sacrificed, you know, on the altar of, you know, achievement and success. So I was working, you know, 100-hour work weeks at McKinsey. I helped build up Skype in its early days before we sold it to eBay for a couple of billion, 2.6 billion. And then I built a chain of restaurants, created a brand and built a chain of restaurants called Chilango in the UK. And all that was a lot of hard work. And it was just, you know, work hard, play hard with never enough, you know, time being spent in the health department. You know, I wasn't investing in, you know, the relationship department as much as I should have. And then after that, it just prompted me to take a much more holistic view on things. You know, I realized that without our health, we're nothing. It doesn't matter what we want to do. And I know you can relate to this as well. Without our health, we're nothing. And then the other interesting thing I thought was that it's funny though, because so what gets you into it is work. So it's not to say, oh, don't work, because obviously work is important to you. So it's like working better, but then, you know, your health is critical. But if you think it's all going to go, you don't think about work, you don't think about health, you think about your loved ones. And so then that really prompted, those are the three pillars. And that's underpins the whole Three Alarms, the book, is that our path to fulfillment comes in realizing our fullest potential on the health front, on the wealth front, and on the home front, or the relationship front. So health, wealth, and relationships. And that's how I think of every single day is, you know, health, wealth, and relationships. Wealth being both how you make the money and then what you do with it, right? So health, wealth, and relationships. And it's been a guiding light since then. And I've just focused on getting better and better and, you know, helping the entrepreneurs and leaders that I coach and mentor to do the same.
So how old were you when this all happened?
So this is 11 years ago, right? So, or was it 10 years ago? No, 11. It was in 2010. Yeah. So I was 34. Yeah. So, you know, I'm 45 now. I feel, you know, young, fit and healthy. I feel actually better than I did when I was 34. So.
It is interesting. So you alluded to it previously. I mean, I had my own experience when I was 29. So before I was 30, almost lost both my kidneys and was intensive care in a Norwegian hospital for a couple of weeks. The story itself is actually very funny and deserves a beer. But you know, and it's one of those things you can look back on and laugh at, because it was just comedy. But yeah, I think that when you have an experience like that at that age, it's one of those ones where you can do something about it, right? Because it's not like you're having a heart attack at the age of 50 and you're thinking, well, what can I do now, right? You're in the prime of your life, really. And you need to start thinking about how do you want to live the rest of your life? I guess is the key. So one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is, and you make this comment in the book about Elon Musk and the way that, you know, we worship the people who are working 16 hours a day. And I think you work with entrepreneurs, CEOs, startup founders, and there has been for a very long time a kind of a drive to tell people, well, if you're not hustling and you're not working like 15 hours a day, then you're not going to be a success. And people then look at Elon Musk, who slept in his office, for months on end, right? And then obviously made a lot of money out of it. But so what's your take on this, right? Should people follow his mode, or should we be looking more towards the wellness and the mental health guys who talk more about yoga and meditation and like, because I see two extremes right now, and I don't see a middle path. Whereas I think the Three Alarms gives you that middle path. So how do you see that?
Precisely as what you just said. So I've actually used Elon Musk as a work identity often, and so, you know, at 9 a.m. sometimes I've programmed my alarm, the alarm that goes off then, to say Elon Musk, because while I'm working for the 8 hours, and often I work, you know, 8, 9, 10 hours in a day. But while I'm working, I want to work with that kind of like fast, focused, kind of genius driven approach that, I'm sure he has. I mean, I haven't observed him working, but, most certain he is probably, working, you know, at a very high caliber and not just a lot of hours. So yeah, I think it's about defining what best looks like for you across each of those three domains, you on the health front, you on the wealth front, you on the home front or the relationship front. And then having a goal to day after day, try to just, you know, close that gap a little bit more each day between your current and best self and each of those domains. And none of it is about perfection, because that's one of the things that, really crushed me in the first half of my career was perfectionism, just constantly. And I didn't follow the 80-20 rule, you know, work 20% of the effort for 80% of the result. I was like, no, I'm going to work now 80% of the effort for that last 20%, you know, so that it's 100, and it's just exhausting. So yeah. So in short, I think, you know, with Elon Musk, everything's a choice at the end of the day. So if you want to choose to work 16 hours, go for it. It will come at a price, 100% guaranteed. And Elon's even said that in his interview, said it's come at a price. It will come at the price to some degree of your health, and it will come at your price at a price for your relationship. So if you're willing to pay that price, because nothing comes for free in life. So if you're willing to pay that, then go for it. Pay it. You know, hack your sleep. Work 20 hours a day if you can. You know, try not to sleep at all. You know, go for it and see what happens. Collect your own data. If you're not willing to pay that price, and if you kind of want, you know, the odds in your favor, then just work as damn focused as you can for the time that you are working on the right things, and do your best to keep your health where it should be as well. And make sure that you're present and available with the relationships that matter most, because guaranteed, if the shit hits the fan and it's all she wrote for you, they'll be the first things that come to mind.
So who did you write this book for?
It's a pretty wide audience, really. I mean, that book is, you know, I focus on predominantly founder CEOs in my one-to-one coaching, but in the course that I've turned the book into, that includes, you know, a lot of the students in that include, just entrepreneurs, leaders, solopreneurs. The book is really for anybody who's ambitious and is hungry for more, but is just feeling somehow overwhelmed, or that they're stuck, or they're plateaued, or they're frustrated, and they're just, you know, they're not sure, how do I keep it in balance? How do I achieve my best on the work front, but without sacrificing the health and the relationship fronts? And so it's that person who, yeah, wants to do their best holistically and realize their full potential. I mean, it's really rooted, that everything I do, from the book to the course to the coaching and mentoring, it's all geared towards solving what I think is the world's biggest problem. So Abraham Maslow, in his research, so he came up with Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And at the top of his pyramid, he said that our path to deepest fulfillment is in realizing our fullest potential. And in his research, he estimated that only 2% of people do that. So if that's the case, to me, that's the world's biggest problem, is how do I provide the strategies, tools, you know, techniques to get, that give people like the activation energy, if you will, to break free from the 98% and join that 2% club. Because I think if we can get more people operating at their full potential in both work and life, that we can solve all the other problems in the world. And there's some differences in opinion on, is it really 2%? You know, I've heard people come out with 8%. I've heard people come out with, oh, it's in the teens, you know, low 20s. But no matter who you speak to, the one thing that they all agree on is that it's a minority of the planet operating at their full potential, not a majority. And I think the world would be in a better place if it was a majority.
So, fun fact that I recently learned about Maslow is that he never actually did the pyramid. There was a sales guy who put everything into the pyramid. And he just, I think he may have had a love-hate relationship with it, but no one's quite sure what his thoughts on it were. Okay, so how do the three alarms help people achieve or get themselves close to that 2%? Can you just talk us through what they are?
Yeah. So the three alarms just refers to one simple aspect of the whole book, which is a super simple technique on the identity front to get you to, you know, step into being your best self. So the book, you know, is about using IPA, so like the beer, but better for you, to reach your full potential. So identity, productivity, and anti-fragility. And on the identity front, and the reason we start there in the book is because you can't become a better version of yourself going forward if you're going to continue being the person you've always been. And then I've already made the case for why defining what best looks like shouldn't just be on the work front, but also on the health and on, you know, the relationship front. So the three alarms relates to you choosing, what does best look like in each of those domains, health, wealth, and relationships, or health, work, and home, however you want to call it, and assigning a phrase to that or a name. So, you know, you could say, I'm a pro athlete, for example, or you could say, if you're into swimming, you could say, on the health front, I'm Michael Phelps. On the work front, again, what's a phrase that means something to you or another person who you aspire to be when you're working? So you might say Elon Musk when you're working for your 8-hour, 10-hour day, not your 16-hour sleeping under your desk day. Or you might, you know, say that you're a, determined leader. And then on the home front, you pick an identity there. And then I just set those as alarms on my phone so that I'm reminded at the right time of day of what my best self looks like. That's most relevant to powering that segment of my day. So let me give you an example. I've changed up my alarms now, even since I wrote the book. And that's what's nice about it. You can swap new things in and out whenever you like. So at 6:30 a.m., the first alarm goes off for me. I've had my 8 hours of sleep, before that point. So I've woken up, naturally. And it says pro athlete because that's the version of me that's going to exercise. And a pro athlete, do they need to feel like exercising? Never. Do they exercise whether they feel like it or not? All the time. When a pro athlete is exercising and they get to the 8th repetition in a particular set, do they just say, "Oh man, that's too much"? Never. The pro athlete says, "Come on, let's put it into high gear." They do the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th reps for good measure. So it's like that kind of mentality is what I take, to the gym in the morning or to my exercise session. And on the work front, my next alarm goes off. And at the moment, it does say Elon Musk. So because, again, I want that kind of intensity and that focus. So that's at 9 a.m. So that goes off, Elon Musk. And it just prompts me to think, well, if it was Elon stepping into my office right now, how would I approach the day? How decisive will I be? How focused will I be? How fast will I be? And then the most powerful one for me goes off at 6:30 p.m. And it says world's best husband and father, just to prompt the question, how would the world's best husband and father walk through that door right now? Or in lockdown, walk downstairs right now. and so it's really about, defining what does best look like in each of those domains, cueing it at the right time of the day, and bringing that intentionality right into the day. How do you want to be rather than just kind of drifting?
So I think one of the things that stands out for me there is that I can definitely understand the visualization piece and understanding that, you need to get yourself into a certain frame of mind for what you're about to do. But I guess you'll hear this a lot, and I can see it in not only my work, but some of the people that I work with, is that, as a business owner or as an entrepreneur, you end up having to do 15 million things at once, right? And it may well be that your start of the day has to be a meeting because of something that someone wants you to do. So then your training is at another point, and it's very hard to compartmentalize all of these different things. How did you end up getting to a situation where you can have this three distinct parts to your day?
Yeah, very much through having some kind of basic structure and rules to my day. So as an example, I divide my day up into maker versus manager time. So in the mornings, I'm doing my more creative work. I try to keep my mornings free of any meetings, internal or external. And in the afternoons, I'm doing that manager work. So interacting with other people, whether internal or external, that's when my meetings happen. And for me, it also maps back to energy, right? So when you wake up, your energy is naturally going to be at its highest. It's like the tank is full of, gas. And then as you go throughout the day, you use that fuel. And so I want my energy, when it's at its highest, to be applied to my most creative, cognitively demanding work. And that I find when I'm trying to really think through and do hard things on my own rather than working, say, in a meeting or speaking with someone else. That's why I map it out that way. The other thing that I do is, I have a rule of three S's. So if you want to, be productive, then respect three S's: schedule, show up, and single task. So when I end a day, knowing what are my top three things that I'm going to do the next day. And I schedule them into my calendar as an appointment with myself. When the appointment comes up, I treat it as if it was another person. So I show up for it and on time. And then when I'm in that appointment, again, I treat it as if I'm meeting with someone else. I only work on that thing. You know, it's like when we're doing this podcast right now, I'm not also working on a presentation or taking phone calls or browsing social media. And so don't do that when you have these super critical appointments with yourself. And so, yeah, entrepreneurs have a ton of stuff to do, but we could all, you know, still make much better use of our time if we're not jumping around from one thing to the next or starting our day with meaningless stuff, and instead starting our day with the most important things and moving from one thing to the next. And there's some really, scary research. So, there's a stat from the book, The One Thing, which talks about how the average, worker, I think they referred to it as in the US and the UK, loses 28% of their day to what's thought of as multitasking, but which is just jumping around from one task to the next at quite a high rate, often again to meaningless things. Let me check my LinkedIn feed. Okay. Let me just do a little bit of Google research very quickly here, you know, and that's ends up being a lot more than you intended. So if we take 52 weeks in a year, let's take six off for, you know, vacation, and let's apply a 28% loss to the 46 weeks that remain. So that means that the average person is losing 13 weeks a year, an entire calendar quarter every single year. So of course people feel stressed, overwhelmed, frustrated. They're playing with three quarters in their year instead of four on average. And when we extrapolate that across a career, 40 years, the average person loses in a decade, an entire decade. That's like two more careers there in a decade, right?
Yeah. And I think things like Slack and Teams and all these instant communication channels don't help very much with that, right?
No, they don't help. And so when I'm working with, founders and CEOs, and one of the things that, you know, I get them to do is to, still do their email in Slack, but compartmentalize it, you know, have them as appointments in your calendar. Oh, this is an email / Slack appointment. So that's what I'm doing right now, email and Slack. Rather than have those notifications, you know, constantly, you know, going off, through the day. Cause it's very distracting, and all those distractions, you know, they destroy your focus. It make it take longer to complete whatever that you were working on right prior. So yeah, it all adds up.
So you mentioned at the very beginning that this was a fairly long process for you. Cause and you mentioned it in the book that it's, it was marginal gains, right? That's what you focused on.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, this has been like the journey. So after the, you know, that plane landed, that journey, it was probably 7 years. It's a good question, actually, because I haven't really, you know, probably took from about 2010 to 2017 to really like amass all of it, because it's like the research and it's the trialing and the testing and then putting all the concepts together, seeing what works. And then, of course, you're testing it with other people as well. And so, yeah, it took a long time for me because I was building it, you know, from the bottom up. But that's the whole point of the book, is that I'm trying to compress all of that bottoms up, you know, start from ground zero kind of research and experimentation into a super simplified, you know, system, basically. So that's the wheel.
You mentioned that obviously you've done 7 years worth of research. Were there any kind of rabbit holes that you went down where you found that actually these are all dead ends? I mean, because obviously you can see from the book that you've spent a lot of time working on yourself and a lot of reading went into your own personal development. Was there any areas that, you know, you can say now, look, hey, don't go down this path, or this I found was really not very useful?
It wasn't so much a rabbit hole, but it's a big, you know, and I mentioned this as one of the traps. It's a big trap, which is perfectionism. Cause as you go down the personal development path, it just very naturally makes you want to become like superhuman and perfect. And I'm going to have all these routines and habits and, you know, and it's just, you have to be super careful because the act of wanting to improve could in and of itself point to your further demise. And that's what I was experiencing initially. And what it ended up creating within me is that I became this super rigid person who didn't like any of my new routines and structures to be disturbed, which meant that I was like a nightmare to live with. Right. So, you know, there's this river of flexibility, right, that you have to imagine, where on one bank of the river is structure and on the other bank of the river is spontaneity. And if you overflow the structure bank, you end up in the land of rigidity, which again makes you not very pleasant to be around, and you kind of hate life very easily. And then if you overflow the spontaneity bank, you end up in the land of chaos, which you don't get anything done, and you kind of constantly regretting things. So the real, I think, skill and insight was learning that, learn a bunch of tools that you can use at your disposal, some more so than others, depending on what tools you need. But don't create like this workshop where from 8:13 to 8:47, I use a sledgehammer. From 8:48 to 9:04, I use this floor sander. You know what I mean? It's like all the, you have a, you know, an arsenal of tools that you use to kind of build you, your new home, you know, you as this new thing. But you still have to maintain your flexibility. And, you know, one of the simplest things that I've done recently is just score my day based on, did I win or learn? You know, rather than all of these like complex, you know, did I do this, that, you know, all this habit tracking. I get to the end of the, well, I set an intention at the beginning of the day to do my very best. I know what best looks like because I've thought about things from, you know, health, you know, work and home front. So I know what best looks like and what it doesn't. I know if I've been procrastinating or if I haven't. I know if I've gotten the things done that I should have gotten done. I know if I reached for an apple versus a donut. I know if I worked out or if I didn't. I know that, you know, if the kids weren't behaving, if I responded back in a cool, calm, collected way or lost my cool. You know, I know whether or not, you know, if my wife asked for some help, and even if it wasn't the perfect time for me, if I did my best to help her, right? So I think I know these things, and I can, I know at the end of the day, did I do my best today or not? And if I did my best, I give myself a W for the day. If I didn't, I give myself an L for learn. And the simple game is no more than never two L's in a row, and no more than six in a month. So that 80% of the time, which is a good rate, I think, I'm showing up at my best. So, you know, yeah, I would say remain flexible and always seek to simplify, and don't take anything, even the stuff presented in the book, don't take it as gospel. You know, try it out, collect your own data, see what works for you, what doesn't, morph it, change it. You know, that's what makes life interesting, right?
Yeah, I guess what comes out for me in the book quite loud and clear is that you shouldn't really be pushing everything to any extreme. And so you shouldn't be striving for perfectionism. You shouldn't be hyper-focusing. There isn't too much structure. There needs to be some flexibility and give and take in what you're doing. So don't, you know, beat yourself over the head if you didn't manage to do all 6 hours of your task focusing on one, like day focusing on the things that you're meant to focus on, right? Because there'll be distractions that come in anyway. And sometimes you just have to answer the phone, right? You have to answer an email. And I think that's what kind of rang out to me loud and clear, is that there's a balance, right? It's not only just a balance in your life, but it's a balance in how you implement what you're talking about.
Yeah. And there can be non-negotiables, which you can view as, you know, potentially an extreme. Like you can have, you know, Jack Canfield has this amazing quote, 99% is a bitch, 100% is a breeze. And what he meant is that there's certain things which sometimes we say, oh, I don't do this 99% of the time, but in certain situations, you know, I deserve it, or it's okay. And then that creates like the slippery slope. Whereas if for certain things we just said, no, 100%, I only do it this way, 100% is a breeze. It's like we don't even have to think about it. Such as, you know, prioritizing 8 hours of sleep, or, you know, having a certain way of eating, or, a certain amount of exercise per week. But yeah, outside of whatever those non-negotiables are for you, I think if people were just, if they just focused on consistency and showed up at 80%, but all the time on the health front, work front, and home front, they'd actually have more success in the long term than doing the 100% and then they've lost an entire day to procrastination or like half the day. Or things are great with their partner and then they get this stupid blowout fight, right? Mm. Or they're in the gym 3 months, boom, got it, I'm ready for the beach. And then it's like they look like a turd within 3 months after that. I know there's a case for sometimes having to go all in. And I had to recently, I had to go all in on the work front with creating the course that's related to the book. And it definitely pushed, my health and kind of time on the home front, to like the minimum possible, but I was still doing stuff, but it was like minimal, especially for this 1 month. But I kind of feel like, the 80% can apply not just on a micro basis, like in the course of a day, but you could think of, out of 365 days a year as well. So it's like, if you could be doing all this stuff for, 80% of those days and you have 20% of those days where it's all out warfare, say on a particular situation or thing, that's okay too. So I think there's different ways where you can kind of cut this 80%, but I think of 80% as, I think of like 80-20 rule, 20% of the effort for 80% of the result. I think of try to do my best 80% of the days. I try to think of, being balanced 80% of the time. So yeah, that's kind of how I think about things.
So how do you engage with your clients? So if people want to find you, how do they find you? How do you?
Easiest thing is just pop over to my website. So it's Eric with a C, E-R-I-C, partaker.com, just like it sounds, ericpartaker.com. And, you can grab a free, digital copy of, the book, The Three Alarms, or you can buy a print copy from Amazon. I won't complain. there's a course there. And then there's, links for like the coaching and mentoring as well.
So what have you seen as improvements in the people that you've been coaching and mentoring? What do they turn around to you and say when they've been through your course?
So one is the value. So when I ask people to, look at, the money that they've invested in the coaching, tying it back to value creation in themselves or their business, sometimes which they can concretely tie to a particular project. Sometimes they just estimate, but I leave it to them to tell me, what's the value. And on average, they say it's a 300% return, which obviously I'm happy to hear. A lot of people say they feel a lot more balanced, have a lot more clarity. They don't feel as overwhelmed. More supported and a big thing too, people often need at the top, cause I've been in the role myself, is accountability, right? So it's like when you're at the very top, who's holding you accountable? Making sure you get things done that you said you were going to get done, right? Board doesn't do that. You meet a board like once a quarter.
It's very true. Yeah.
Maybe once a month, but it's like, every week after week, who's holding you accountable? And often nobody is. And so just that right there helps because I dare to say the things that, nobody else dares to say to them or that nobody even knows that they should say because they don't even know that there's an issue because it's all hidden, right?
True. So. No, I agree with that 100%. I think, when you're running your own business, it's easy to put the structure in for everyone else and not for yourself, right? Make sure that everyone
has. And it's easy to just project a picture that is far more perfect than it actually is. Mm. Right. And when you get under the hood, you're like, okay. So here's the reality. Now that's fine. It's not, nothing to feel bad about. It just means that there'll be a lot more, growth, kind of freedom and fulfillment by rectifying those things.
All right. So we're reaching the end of the podcast, and there is always the one question I ask everybody. So I shall ask that to you as well. If you could go back in time 20 years and give advice to your younger self, what would that advice be? Because this is just before you've actually had your...
Yeah. I would say knowledge isn't power. Knowledge, you know, isn't where the game is played. It's about translating knowledge into action. That's where the game is played. So think less and do more. That's what I would have told myself.
Would you have listened to yourself?
Probably not. Yeah, I mean, now I'm constantly like, you know, because of all the positive feedback loops I've developed by taking kind of rapid, imperfect, imprecise action. It's like I've become a bit of a junkie with that. It's like, just do, like, you know, don't make it perfect. Just ship it, get it out, done. And that creates far more momentum than, you know, trying to get everything lined up perfectly.
Very true. All right, Eric, thanks for that. It's been great having a conversation with you.
Likewise. Thanks very much. And thanks to all those listening.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you like what you hear, then please subscribe. We're the Atom Ventures podcast, and you can find us on Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, all the great podcasting sites. Please also leave a review, and if you want to get in contact, then please visit our site, atomcto.com. You can find us on LinkedIn under Atom Ventures and Atom CTO, and you can email us at info@atomcto.com.